Sean, it's Wednesday. Teams are doing their medicals. Players are in camp. Training camps across the National Hockey League are open. Okay, two of them were open, the Coyotes and the Kings, but they opened in Australia. So that's a little bit different. But here in the Northern Hemisphere, where we are right now, 30 camps opening right now on Wednesday as we record this. It was like a short summer, but I'm kind of excited. Let's go.
It's back to school day.
It is.
Except we're actually excited about it, unlike all the kids that had to go back to school in the past.
Well, everybody gets excited about back to school day. They got all their new stuff. They don't get excited about the second day. But I'm excited about the second day, because the second day they'll be on the ice.
It's all good. We have hockey to talk about again, and that's what we're going to do for the next however long.
But, you know, we got to start with, obviously, what's happened in Columbus. And we could sit here, Sean, and we can rehash this whole thing with Mike Babcock. We can rehash the press conference that Jarmo Kekalainen, their GM in Columbus, and John Davidson, the president of hockey operations, had on Monday. We could talk about the mea culpas. We could talk about them admitting a mistake, apologizing to the team. It's all been done. It's Wednesday. Training camp's open. And Pascal Vincent's the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Not planned. Wasn't expected. But this is the way it is right now. And I wrote it on Monday. And to me, the moment Pascal Vincent sat down at that table and started talking about what he is going to do and the future of this team, that was it. You have to look forward here. He's not an unfamiliar face. He's been with this team for the past two seasons. The transition has to happen right away. There's a lot that can be dissected and digested with the Babcock stuff. But honestly, if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, you can't even talk about that stuff anymore, because you got to move on. A slow start to training camp is a slow start to the season, and a slow start to the season will kill the Columbus Blue Jackets.
But you can't move on. I think that's too big of an ask. I think they need to compartmentalize it. It's going to be there. It's going to hang over them, good or bad. It's part of the storyline of their season. Unfortunately, they made this bed and now they're going to lie in it. But that's the beauty of hockey, right? It happens all the time. Coaches get changed, you know, and you've seen good and bad come out of it. I'll tell you this, Pascal Vincent is a hockey lifer, and he's had success wherever he's gone. I'm excited to see what he does with this team, right? I think there's the pieces there to be successful. I think he's a positive guy. I think he's a guy that can make the best out of what is not a great situation. And I think this can be a galvanizing thing for the Columbus Blue Jackets, because they hear the noise, right? They hear that it's a mess and they're not going to survive the early part of the season. And then they're going to be behind the eight ball and they're going to be chasing it. And, you know, they missed the playoffs last year and now they're going to miss the playoffs again this year. And they're professionals. They're going to go out and they're going to try and prove people wrong. So I'm excited to see what happens in Columbus, especially over the first month of the season.
And I get the fact that this can be an impossible spot for Pascal Vincent, because up until Friday of last week, you know, or at least last week, right, he was the associate coach and that was his role. And when you're the associate coach, your role is obviously much different from the head coach. You interact in a different way with the players. Your expectations for the players are different. Their expectations for you are different. And now, as we talk, he's, you know, at medical, the players in Columbus are going through medicals on Wednesday, and that's today. And then on the ice on Thursday, that will be tomorrow, and for their first practice under a new coach who just last week was their associate coach. I get how that can be an impossible spot for him, but at the same time, he's not new. You know what I mean? If this was a new guy coming into the organization and he had just a couple of days to get this going, that's an impossible spot. This is a transition and it's a quick one, but in many respects, it's no different from a coach being fired in the middle of the season and another guy taking over who's been the assistant coach. You've got to adjust. You've got to get used to it. You've got to play differently, right? You've got to treat you have to understand that Pascal Vincent is no longer the associate coach. He's now the boss. What I thought was interesting too from the press conference is Pascal Vincent said he and Mike Babcock are aligned in how they think the game should be played and how they feel about the game. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying they're aligned in everything they do away from the ice, but in terms of what goes on the ice, he said there's an alignment there and they were in agreement by what they were planning and implementing this summer. And that is going to continue. If that's going to continue, I don't think this is going to be that hard of a transition, especially because the players know this guy and the young players would be getting to know this guy. I think it can be okay for the Blue Jackets, and I think it can be okay for their players if they can just compartmentalize, as you said, the Babcock stuff and what happened, push it aside and realize they got to focus on getting off to a good start here.
Two things with that. I mean, Pascal was the boss. That's the associate coach, right? That's what he does. He's the boss, right? The Babcock's more like the CEO, right? He's the guy in game. He'll do some stuff. And you know, obviously he's a great X and O's coach, but Pascal Vincent's been the guy. Like, he's been the point man. He's the guy that kind of runs everything. And so, you know, he's been the voice they've been listening to for the most part. So I don't think any of that changes. And then the other thing you think about is they're a relatively young team and they have some really important young pieces coming up. And that's Pascal's bread and butter. He's coached in the Q, he's coached in the AHL, you know, did really nice things with a generation of Winnipeg players that are now with the Jets that started with the Moose while he was there. So he has that ability to deal with multiple generations of players. And Columbus skews to the younger. So I think he's in a very good place to be able to maximize what happens with that part of the Columbus roster. So it's not the way he wanted to become coach, but it's usually, for most coaches, it's never the way they want to become the coach, right? They take somebody else's job, and that's part of the business. And I think they all understand that deep down, and that's how they're able to process it. So it's not the way that he wanted to become a coach, but after 30 years of waiting, it's his opportunity now. And you can be damn sure that he's going to do everything to maximize it, no matter the situation. You don't get an opportunity to say when it's over, oh, that wasn't a great situation I walked into. I should get another chance. You don't know if that other chance is ever coming. So you better make hay with whatever situation you have.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Before we continue with this, just a little bit more on this, just a quick note, we'll have Clayton Keller, an interview with the Arizona Coyotes forward. That's coming up shortly. He's in Australia right now with the Coyotes and Kings. I want to get to that in a second. And later on, we're going to have Jason Robertson from the Dallas Stars. We spoke to both of these players at the NHL's Player Media Tour last week in Las Vegas. Really good stuff coming up with Clayton Keller and a little later on with Jason Robertson from the Dallas Stars. But quick, back to something you said regarding this. You think it can galvanize the players. I wonder, Sean, is that just lip service with the Columbus players? Or is this something that really can galvanize them as a group? Because there were questions when this happened. Is it a fractured room? Is it a fractured group, right? Did things happen with Mike Babcock with younger players that the younger players didn't feel comfortable going to the veterans? Things along those lines. Now, they say they've had meetings. They say that they're together, that it's going to galvanize them. I mean, they have to hope it does. I hope it does, because I think, you know, that, you know, if Columbus is good, the race in the Metropolitan Division is even better. And that's we want that, right? Is it lip service, though? Or do you have to see it? Or do you really believe it right now?
Well, of course you have to see it, but I believe it, because the one thing I believe about anything, and it's not just hockey, is you become stronger through conversation, right? And through difficult conversations. I think your character's revealed when you have to have really hard conversations. And there's been some hard conversations behind closed doors in Columbus amongst that team. Like, I think that's where you build those bonds of trust and you show that vulnerability, you know, and you have 22 other guys pick you up and you move forward as one unit. You know, that's what I think, and that's what I believe is going to happen. I think that's where real growth in a team happens. I don't think it's other things. I think you have to have those really, really hard conversations, and different things force it, right? It's the same thing in the playoffs. You can have a really good team and you get in trouble in the playoffs, and you have to have some really hard conversations over a short period of time. This is different. This has been over a longer period of time, and it's going to continue. Like, it's not like they walk on ice tomorrow after physicals today and they drop the puck and they start practicing and they have their first scrimmage and all of a sudden this all goes away. Like, that's a pipe dream. This is going to be here. People aren't going to let it go away. So they're going to continue to have these conversations for weeks, you know, and Pascal Vincent's going to be a part of it, but the players are going to be a huge part of it. They're going to have to police their room, and they're going to have to make an atmosphere that's inclusive to everybody. And when they do that, they're going to make their team stronger.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, I have to see it. I want to believe it. I like what I'm hearing so far from Pascal Vincent and moving the puck forward. I like what I'm hearing from the veteran players there and Zach Werenski and Boone Jenner and Johnny Gaudreau about this being galvanizing to the group. But you got to see it. It can't fracture them, and they cannot get off to a bad start if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, because the division's too good. It's just too hard to come back from. So we'll see where it goes. But you know what can certainly be a galvanizing thing, John? A 17-hour flight. And that's what the Coyotes did, and that's what the Kings did to get to Australia for the Global Series. They're going to play a pair of exhibition games Friday and Saturday at Rod Laver Arena, where they play the Australian Open, building a rink on top of a tennis court. Very cool thing. Our coverage has been terrific on this, and we're going to get Clayton Keller here talking about it. We talked to him obviously before they went, when we were in Las Vegas together last week. But we have Emily Benjamin and Nick Kotsanika there. Matt Dumba is doing a blog. Matt Dumba, in his blog for us, said he slept 13 hours on the flight to Australia. I cannot remember the last time I slept more than like 9. And this guy, and that's talking like in a bed. This guy slept 13 hours on a plane and said that his teammates used him as a poker table or a card table because he was sleeping and he didn't want to move. So they just used him as the table. He was the table, not in the game. He was the table for their card game.
I've never, ever seen anybody sleep like hockey players.
It's amazing. It really is.
It's unbelievable.
13 hours?
The last time I slept 13 hours, Dan, college.
I don't even know if I did it then.
Well, I did it in college, but there were reasons for it. Yeah, I've never seen, you know, I've been lucky enough to go on a few of these NHL trips to Europe. I actually went on one of the first ones ever to Japan when the Predators and the Penguins played in Tokyo. But a few times I've been on the team charter, and their ability to sleep in situations that should not be conducive to sleep is unbelievable. I remember one time I got on a plane and I think it was Antti Raanta, and he was with the Blackhawks, and he asked the stewardess for all the pillows that they had left over. And he built a fort on the floor in front of his business class seat. And he put all the pillows down, blankets, made a little fort, and he was asleep before the plane took off. It was a 7-hour flight. I don't think he stirred until the wheels hit the ground. And I was a couple of seats away, and I was just in awe the whole time as I sat there wishing myself to get a couple hours sleep so when I landed, I wouldn't be a basket case because it was the middle of the day. It's unbelievable, the positions that they find and the tricks that they have. But 17 hours is a big ask. And then they landed and they got right after it, which is awesome. You want to capitalize on that trip. They're only there for 7 days. You don't want to miss any of it by sleeping, right? Like you want to experience everything. Plus, you mentioned it, it's training camp and it's exhibition games. And both these teams have a lot on the line this season, right? Arizona wants to be a better team. I don't know if they're a playoff team, but they've made acquisitions like Matt Dumba, you know, to take a step forward and be more competitive like they were at the end of last year. And the Kings are right in that mix, right? Of the cream of the Pacific Division. You know, adding Dubois, they're three deep down the middle. And, you know, they have the guns now to compete with the Edmonton Oilers, who beat them in the playoffs the last 2 years, and with the Vegas Golden Knights. And they want to use this to build towards being strong right out of the gate this season. So it's a pleasure trip in many ways. You know, they've already played tennis. Drew Doughty played tennis last night again, or would have been today. The time difference is killing me. It's 14 hours. Try planning coverage around that. But he played tennis against one of the best Australian players in the world. A couple of guys learned how to do Australian rules football drop kicks from Mason Cox, who's an American, the only American playing in Aussie rules football. So they've got to do some really cool things already. There's more things on tap. And then, you know, they're going to finish it with two games on Friday and Saturday, both of which are on ESPN Plus and NHL Network. And I can't wait to check it out and see the atmosphere. I have a good friend who lives there, Stephen White, who's the play-by-play guy for the Australian Hockey League there, the Pro League, which actually plays in our summer. They just finished. And he's over the moon. Right. This he's yeah. waited for this his whole life. Huge hockey fan, you know, has the NHL package, watches the NHL religiously, even with the 14-hour difference. And now it's in his backyard and he gets to see it all up close. The Stanley Cup is there. Both teams brought their best group of players. It's not a preseason roster by any means. These are their full rosters. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I don't think I can add anything to that. So let's have Clayton Keller do it for us. Here is the interview we did with Clayton Keller. From the Arizona Coyotes. We did it last week in Las Vegas at the NHL Player Media Tour before he took the 17-hour flight to Australia. Here is Clayton Keller.
Clayton, thanks for doing this. So you got an Australian accent?
Not yet.
Not yet? Are you going to try and get one before you go?
Probably not, no. No.
Are you excited to go, though? I mean, have you ever been to Australia?
No, I've never been, but yeah, I'm super excited for it. I think it'll be good for, you know, the team bonding and getting to, you know, spend a lot of time with, you know, basically our roster. So it's going to be a lot of fun and, you know, looking forward to, you know, growing the game over there as well.
Have you ever flown that far?
I've been on some long flights, but it's a long time ago. I went to Russia a couple times, Sweden. So but never that far.
What are you planning to do on the plane? A lot of Netflix, a lot of cards. What's your plane trick?
Yeah, I don't know. Normally I would say Netflix, but apparently there's no Wi-Fi on the plane, so I might have to download some movies or play some cards and then, you know, try to sleep for the rest of it.
You're going to have to download like six different Netflix series in order and you can watch them all probably on this flight.
Yeah, you can get a lot in, that's for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned it's good for the team. 100% agree with that, right? And it absolutely can be because you're away, it's together. Grow the game there too. It's an opportunity as well. But for you personally, I mean, it's a trip to Australia and somebody else is paying for it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, the nice part about it. I think we're going to, you know, try to, you know, do some sightseeing and, you know, play some golf over there as a team. So that should be, you know, a lot of fun as well. So, you know, it's training camp, but it's also, you know, a nice little switch up for training camp and, you know, to be able to do it over there.
Is it ever a place you thought you'd go?
Probably not, honestly. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Probably not, no.
Has the team talked to you at all about kind of the adjustments that you need to make, like sleep-wise and everything else going over? There's a whole science that goes into this, and obviously the NHL is one of the most competitive things in the world. Everybody's looking for an edge. Have you had a lot of those conversations?
Yeah, for sure. You know, our staff has done a good job of, you know, kind of filling us in and, you know, how to, you know, adjust our bodies and, you know, to the time zone. And, you know, they're doing, you know, a great job of kind of having us, giving us all the information and, you know, all the different, you know, things we need to do and to take as well. So, you know, I'm, you know, excited for it.
When you're there that weekend, when you play, is the Aussie Rules Football Grand Championship, basically their version of the Super Bowl. Have you ever watched Aussie Rules Football?
I haven't, but I think there was, you know, talk about us maybe trying to go to a game or something. I think, you know, after we play the first day, it's either that night, and I think we're trying to, you know, set something up where we can go watch it. But I've heard it's a super big deal, and, you know, there's going to be a ton of people there.
Have you seen highlights at all? Because I'm curious if you think you could play.
I haven't seen highlights, no, but probably not.
That's a good choice. When you see highlights, go on YouTube and look at them. It's a pretty violent game.
Yeah, so probably not, no.
Have you done any research for things, you know, just what you could see there, what you might, I mean, like any just anything on your own? And I know, like, you're going to have limited time to be on your own there. There's a schedule or whatnot, and it is training camp. It's there for work. I totally get that. But have you researched anything about it?
I haven't really. No, to be honest, but, you know, I think there was also talks of us maybe going to the zoo or something, seeing some kangaroos or something, but, you know, nothing. I haven't researched too much yet. Maybe I'll do that on the before the flight or, you know.
Can't do it.
Have someone fill me in. Yeah, I can't do it on the flight.
Can't do it on the flight.
Yeah.
I actually was talking with one of your teammates, J.J. Moser, about this recently, and you touched on it as well, going there to help grow the game, too. I mean, that's a big part of this trip. Do you almost feel like a salesman for the NHL when you're there, in a good way? Not like, you know, car salesman trying to get, you know, but in a good way. Like, you're selling hockey. You're selling the NHL brand when you are there. Is that something that you feel is an important part of this?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it's a unique opportunity, you know, to play over there. They've probably never been to, you know, an NHL game, and, you know, to have, you know, two great teams, and, you know, you see the things that the NBA does all across the world and how, you know, big their game is and how fast it grows. So, you know, I think, you know, that's, you know, a good thing to do as well.
How much do you know about Logan Cooley? Have you skated with him at all? Have you done anything with him yet? And is this trip a huge part of that acclimation process for you guys as a team and for him as a newer player?
Yeah, for sure. We actually skated for a week together in Minnesota this summer. We actually have the same agent, so I went to his camp, and you know, we got to skate with each other a couple times there, and you know, went back and forth on text, kind of before he signed, when he signed, and you know, things like that. So yeah, I think it'll be good to, you know, have him on that trip and, you know, acclimate him to our team, get comfortable, you know, because, you know, it's a lot different than college, you know. It's, you know, 82 games, it's a long year, there's ups and downs, and so, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to, you know, help him and, you know, reach his full potential.
It's amazing how the roles get reversed, right? Remember, it's not that long ago you were that guy.
Still feels like I'm super young.
Right.
Well, I am. But,
you are, but yeah. Not that long ago you were that guy, and now you're almost the role model and a mentor for that guy.
Yeah. Kinda yeah, cool. For sure. It's crazy, you know, how time flies. And next year I think I'm going into my 7th year, and, you know, it really does fly by, you know, and to now be in more of a leadership role and, you know, to help those guys and, you know, there were so many, you know, key players that, you know, really helped me make that transition and, you know, feel comfortable in the room and just, you know, to be yourself.
With the way that last year ended and adding Logan and adding some other pieces, is this as confident as you've ever felt about the Coyotes?
Yeah, without a question. I think, you know, our core, you know, took steps last year, you know, even with, you know, a lot of nonsense going on and, you know, we have a tight room and our coaching staff does, you know, such a great job of, you know, keeping us together, keeping us, you know, focused on, you know, the next day, not looking at, you know, a couple days down the road. So I think, you know, it's super exciting and, you know, this is definitely the most, you know, excited I've been going into a season. You know, last summer, you know, with my injury, I couldn't really, you know, train or do any of the things that I wanted to do, really. So, you know, this summer was huge for me to be able to skate, train, and, you know, just enjoy life, you know, away from the rink as well, too.
It finally feels like it's going somewhere, right?
In
Arizona, you have continuity. You've got coaches now with coaches who've been extended. Their contracts have been extended. And we know how the business is. I mean, that with coaches, that may not mean much, but, I mean, at least it shows some continuity. Is that how it feels for you? Like, hey, there's a direction now, and we're heading in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, and now it's up to us players to, you know, keep making strides and, you know, push for the playoffs this year. And, you know, all goes well. You know, there's, you know, hopefully a rink here soon or rink plans, you know, dialed in. And, you know, it's a great place to play and live. And, you know, it's, you know, once we get that rink and, you know, keep pushing, I think it'll, you know, grow even more and be more exciting for sure.
You spoke about having a full summer, being able to train, but then you also said to have a summer and have a life. What do you do during the summer? What's your summer like? What are your escapes?
Yeah, I mean, I took some, you know, time off after the season because, you know, it was basically nonstop from, you know, since I got hurt until, you know, the end of the season. So it was nice to, you know, just relax. You know, I played a lot of golf, you know, and then after that I was kind of, you know, seeing family and working my way back into the gym and skating. I like to, you know, skate a lot in the summer. That's, you know, when I feel my best in the season. I think, you know, times before I maybe took some more time off, and, you know, I think we play such a unique sport, and, you know, skating is just so different. So I think, you know, just being on the ice and, you know, working on my craft is, you know, really going to help me.
It's a night like at Mullet Arena.
Yeah, it's great. You know, there was the one game against Boston, obviously, where I think someone got their finger bit off, which was pretty crazy. You know, the first game of the year was obviously awesome as well. But, you know, it's unique and, you know, it was a little different at first for us. We really didn't know what to expect and how the locker rooms are going to be and things like that. And once we got settled in, I think, you know, we proved it's, you know, a hard place to play. And, you know, we want to, you know, continue to have a good, you know, home record this season as well.
I'll take it. What?
You didn't hear about that?
No, I did not hear about that.
Stop the presses.
Stop everything. Somebody got their finger bit off?
Yeah. In the stands.
Elaborate.
It was the third period against Boston. It was like a 1-1 game. And then, like, all of a sudden in the third period, we just saw, like, in, like, the right corner, like, there was, like, people getting, like, thrown and jumping over each other. And everyone was kind of like, what's going on? And then, you know, we talked with our, you know, team security guy, and he was like, yeah, like, there was a fight, and someone got their finger bit off, and, yeah, so a couple of people got arrested, so that was definitely something that I didn't see coming.
That goes down in team lore right there, right?
I like how you just dropped that in, too. It was not like...
Yeah, well, I thought people...
I thought it was common knowledge.
Yeah, it was on social media a little bit right after, but maybe didn't get the exposure.
Dan, I thought we were dialed in.
I thought we were good. I guess not. It sounds, though, like... I mean, I was there for opening night last year. I've been there, and it's unique, right? And it did create... There was talk, I remember, going into last season... It could create a home, you know, home ice advantage. It did. It really did. How do you then replicate that on the road? Because that was the problem for you guys. You know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I hate using excuses. You know, we had some long road trips to start the season. I think we had like 30 or something games on the road. We were gone for 2 weeks. We'd come home and not play any games. And I think we had, you know, a couple times where we had like 2 days off because, you know, we got in at 5 a.m. and, you know, that's basically a day wasted, and then you need another day to, you know, rest and recover. So I think, you know, this year with, you know, a bit better of a schedule, it's, you know, going to be a little bit easier for us, and, you know, it'll be nice to, you know, not play that many on the road to, you know, start the season.
By the way, it must be a really nice rank if Dan's saying nice things about it. He went to Arizona.
University of Arizona.
Okay.
Not Arizona State. Yeah. So when I walked in there for the first time, it was walking into enemy territory. And, and it was very difficult for me to even take a step foot in. But then it was like, oh, this is really nice, which really was even more painful for me. You know, But I sucked it up and I went in there. But, you know, I lived out there in Tucson, Arizona for a while when I was going to college. You have talked about how this team, this is your team, and you've talked about the market in itself. What is it about there? Like, what is it about playing there that you really appreciate?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's easy living as well, you know, for guys with families and kids. You know, it's a super nice, you know, area to live, and, you know, the hockey's, you know, kind of trending in the right direction. We have, you know, great group of guys, and, you know, I can honestly say, you know, since, you know, I've been there the last couple of years, we've had, you know, such a, you know, tight team, and, you know, I think some, you know, guys say that, but I don't know if it's actually true, and, you know, I truly believe that, you know, about our team, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's nice when, you know, you're coming from a long road trip, and, you know, whether it was a tough one or not, you know, you step off the plane, and you can, you know, kind of refresh. You know, the weather is usually pretty nice, and, you know, there's, you know, on days off, there's things to do away from the rink, you know, just laying out in the sun or things like that. So it's, you know, super, super nice to have that as well for, you know, the mental side of it.
You spoke a little bit earlier about how Andre, your coach, has been really good for a lot of reasons, keeping you guys together, keeping your eye on the prize. He came into this league, nobody knew a lot about him. Hardcore hockey fans knew about him with Team Canada and things like that, but a very low profile, and it's kind of kept a low profile in Arizona. For people who don't know him and know who he is as a coach, can you explain why he is such a good coach for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can relate to, you know, every player, and, you know, there's, you know, I think everyone on my team would tell you that, you know, he's honest and he's going to tell you straightforward. He's, you know, he's not going to go behind your back. And, you know, there's he turns the page, you know, if he's yelling at you one night, you know, he sees you in the morning the next day, it's like it never happened, you know, hey, let's work on this, you know, and I think that's what guys really appreciate, and he truly does care about the player and, you know, life away from the rink, and I think everyone feels that, and it's, you know, we always, you know, say we play for the guys in the room, but I think we're also playing for, you know, him and the coaching staff as well, like we kind of have that bond together for sure.
Hey, man, thanks for doing this. Get to downloading. You got a lot to download for that flight.
Yeah, that's right. No problem. Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it, man.
Yep, awesome.
Good stuff is always there from Clayton Keller, who is with the Coyotes in Melbourne, in Australia, right now. Quick shout-out, though, Sean. Rich Nairn, longtime PR guy for the Coyotes, longtime executive there. He announced that he's resigned his position. Always been a huge help to us at NHL.com and here at NHL at the Rink. Just wanted to give a quick shout out to Rich Nairn for everything he did in 27 years with the Winnipeg Jets and then the Arizona Coyotes, moved with them. He's going to move on to different things, but one of the absolute best. They should all be like Rich Nairn.
Yeah, he gets it, right? He's one of those PR guys that understands that he's promoting the game, he's promoting his players, he's promoting his team, and he's always done a great job at it. A true professional, and probably a better person than he is a professional. So whatever he does next, he's going to knock it out of the park, I'm sure. And you know, there's some big shoes to fill in Arizona now as far as their PR department goes, but you know, good luck to Rich and everything he does going forward.
Yeah, and not always the easiest job there in Arizona either, with everything that they've had going on in their entire tenure, basically, in the desert there. So good luck to Rich. Said he's moving on to other opportunities and spend more time with his family. So good for him. All right, John, let's move on ourselves. A couple of things. Obviously, training camps are open now, Wednesday. Everybody's on the ice Thursday. And I did storylines. You know, one storyline per team, essentially, going into training camp. That's on NHL.com now. Two separate stories, Eastern Conference one, Western Conference one, two in the East that I wanted to hit on. One, they're both in the Atlantic Division, and they're actually not separated by too much ground either. The Buffalo Sabres and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Toronto, you know, listen, I mean, everybody talks about Toronto. And the big question, I think, for the Leafs, they're supposed to be good. We know they're supposed to be good. Expectations are high. Is the defense going to be good enough? Is the goaltending going to stay healthy? But who's going to play on Auston Matthews' wings? Who is it? Is it Mitch Marner or is it William Nylander? Is it both? If it's one of them on the right side, is it Tyler Bertuzzi on the left? Is it Matthew Nyes, a rookie who, ironically, is from Arizona, as is Auston Matthews? We were just talking about Arizona, right? Who's going to be there? Because that's going to be a storyline, I think, that's going to be interesting to follow throughout training camp and the early part of the season for the Toronto Maple Leafs, because whoever that person is, whoever those two people are, it kind of sets everything up for the rest of their lineup as well. Nylander, to me, is the right guy on the right side of Matthews, and I think it's fascinating if Matthew Nyes gets that opportunity, earns that opportunity. He's going to have to earn it more than, say, a Tyler Bertuzzi will, because of, you know, Bertuzzi's got a lot more of a resume, obviously, in the NHL. But if it's Matthew Nyes, I mean, what a huge opportunity it could be for a rookie who made an impact when he came in last season. And, you know, to two Arizona guys playing on the same line in Toronto, that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And Matthew did. He made a huge impact when it came up. It's a small sample size, but, you know, obviously the pedigree's there. But it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. Does it really matter what their order is for their forwards, right? They have four top guys in their top six, right? So throw them around however you want. They have some depth behind it. To me, it's goaltending, right? It's always goaltending for them. Like, what's going to happen with their goalies? Do they have a number one? I don't know that they do. And can you be a true cup contender without a number one? And I know you may throw Vegas at me, but this feels different.
Well, it's different because they don't have Vegas's defense. And that's, look, I mean, I think the Auston Matthews question is very interesting, and it is something that's going to be watched and monitored throughout the entire training camp. And because it's Auston Matthews and it's the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's going to be a big deal. But Ilya Samsonov is their number one. He is their number one goaltender, okay? But does he have the defense that's going to enable him to play like a number one goaltender. Big reason why Vegas did is because of Aiden Hill. Aiden Hill had the defense. They were big and strong, and they remain solid and healthy throughout that entire run. So yeah, I'll throw Vegas at you, but I'll throw Vegas at you because of their defense. And in Toronto, yes, you have Morgan Riley. TJ Brody's there. How good is John Klingberg going to be? Jake McCabe, Timothy Liljegren, Giordano's almost 40 years old. Look, I mean, I think the biggest question is not necessarily in net, but it's on the back end for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Are they good enough there? They're going to outscore their problems. They're going to outscore their problems. That's in the regular season. Can they do it in the playoffs? And they're not the only team. Look, the other team I wanted to talk about here is Buffalo. And that's more goaltending related than defense related. But look, Toronto's going to outscore its problems, but it's the defense.
I think all but 8 or 10 teams in this league are, what about the goaltending? You know, it's such a premium position. And one of those teams is Buffalo, right? Everybody has such high expectations for Buffalo. They missed the playoffs by 1 point. You know, they're going to find that 1 point this year. They're going to come in the playoffs. They're the sexy team in the NHL right now. And I think there's a lot of reason for optimism. That team's grown up together. We talked with Tage Thompson at Player Media Tour. He's super excited, you know, about what the future holds for that team. Darlene has gone through the lean times and is ready for things. But they have a three-headed monster in goal, and they're hoping that Devin Levy is that guy. And he's a young kid, very little experience at the pro game. Was unbelievable as a junior goaltender, a college goaltender, like just set the world afire, right? And I think he has the pieces to be a elite goaltender in this league, but it doesn't happen overnight. Only on the rarest of occasions does it happen overnight. And if you're a playoff team, I can't think of five playoff teams. I can't count on my fingers the number of playoff teams that have had inexperienced goalies carry them.
Right. And that is obviously the storyline that I wrote about for the Sabres is Devin Levi, Eric Comrie, Ukko Pekkalukkonen combined 100 NHL games combined between the three of them. It's interesting to me. And I like the Sabres a lot. I'm picking the Sabres to make the playoffs because I think they will get goaltending. I think somebody's going to step up here and be that guy. And if not, they're going to go acquire it. Right. Because there's a guy in Winnipeg who might get traded by February in Connor Hellebuck. And okay, it's easy to, you know, put one and put them on the other. It's not that easy to make it happen. And where are the Jets going to be? That's a whole other topic that I don't want to even get into right now, but I think they'll get the goaltending. I love the defense. I love the offense that they have. I love the forwards. I think the forwards come back and play well defensively to help the goaltender. Devin Levi, I remember him last season, he came into Madison Square Garden and he played really well. And after the game, I was so impressed by him. He wasn't in awe of the moment or anything like that. He enjoyed it. But it was more along the lines of just like, yeah, I'm good. I know I am. I think goalies in general are coming into the league with a little bit of a different mentality at a younger age now with that. I'm good and I can play here. Give me the opportunity. It's not the same old with goalies. And in the goalie fraternity will probably be happy to hear this is they're not weird. They're not as weird anymore. And Devin Levi was not weird at all. There was nothing awkward about him. He wasn't like, oh, that's the goalie. No, he was like one of the boys and I'm here and I'm ready and I'm an NHL goalie and I know I belong here. If that he can carry on to the ice for the Sabres at the start of the season and earn that opportunity, I think they're in good hands. They're going to need more, right? They're going to need more, but it's going to be a storyline that we'll be following in Buffalo. Really, I mean, not just in training camp, all season long.
I want them to succeed. I think it's a great story. There's two issues, right? One is I like their defense, but it's not a defensive defense. So some of the problems that you talked about in Toronto are going to be there. And then you look at his body of work. He's never played 40 games.
He's played 7.
But at any level, right?
Right, I know.
Like on college, you play back-to-backs every weekend. That's it. You're not playing 2 weekday games. You know, you're not getting run out there every second day for 7 months. Like that's a completely different mentality. So they're going to need 2 goaltenders. I don't know who the other one's going to be. I don't think Granato knows who the other one's going to be. They're going to figure that out. But the workload concerns me.
Yeah, well, I mean, is Devin Levi going to be one of those two? He's got to earn that, right? So that's a question that they'll have in training camp. Let's switch it go to the West. I did Western Conference storylines. Like I said earlier, we're going to have an interview that we did with Jason Robertson from the Dallas Stars. That's going to be coming up here shortly. But Sean, before we get to that, the news on Tuesday was Braden Schenn being named the captain of the St. Louis Blues. We talked about galvanizing teams. We talked about the Blue Jackets earlier. We talked about the Coyotes and the Kings and, you know, their ability to come together as groups and whatnot. Braden Schenn played a lot of games in the NHL. He's played a lot of games in St. Louis. He's getting the opportunity now. I believe he's 32 years old to be a captain. He takes over. Ryan O'Reilly was the last one. Alex Pietrangelo before him in St. Louis. Is Braden Schenn's got a job here ahead of him? I mean, this is a team that's trending younger with its leadership group too. I think of Robert Thomas, who was on the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard. You can listen to that. Robert Thomas, I think of Jordan Kyrou, and it's Braden Schenn who kind of takes over as the main leader on a leadership group that's trending younger in St. Louis, and they're coming off a season where they did not make the playoffs, and there's still expectations there for the Blues to be a good team. They won the Stanley Cup now 4 years ago, right? What do you think of Braden Schenn as the Blues captain?
I think he'll be great as the Blues captain. I'm shocked that it wasn't Robert Thomas, and I think he's a great leader, right? I think he showed that last year when he went to bat for the team, right? When Craig Berube, the coach, was kind of down on the club and you know, had some really harsh comments for them. And Robert Thomas was the voice that came out of that room and said, hey, watch it. Like, this is who we are, mm-hmm. and we're going to show who we are. Like, I thought that was a huge moment of progress for a young player. And I thought this was an opportunity to kind of begin that process of setting up a younger player who had exhibited an ability to lead for a long time. But Braden's a great captain. Like, he's one of those, he's a warrior, right? He's that guy that you're going to follow. He's going to lead by example. And, you know, he's been around the NHL block a few times now. So I don't think you can go wrong. And I think there is a leadership council there, but you talk about that being the big news from Tuesday. I got even bigger news for you on the captain front.
All right.
Brad Marchand is the new captain of the Boston Bruins. Just announced.
See, you're breaking news to me because I haven't had a chance to look and see that. He is the new captain. That makes
sense. Yes. And look, it's not a surprise.
But Sean, I have the same reaction to Brad Marchand as you have with Braden Schenn. And I agree with it. I agree with your reaction on Braden Schenn, right? I thought it was going to be Robert Thomas too. Like I said, it's a younger leadership group that's developing there in St. Louis, and he would be the guy of it. Schenn is signed for a long term. So if Robert Thomas or Jordan Kyrou or somebody like that's going to get the captaincy in St. Louis, it's not going to be for a long time, more than likely, right? So that's kind of why I thought it would be that way there. So I agree with you. And I understand, and it's not a surprise that Brad Marchand would be the new captain in Boston. He's the one that's been the tightest with Patrice Bergeron and played the longest with him, has learned the most from him and Zdeno Chara, the previous two captains. But I thought it would be Charlie McAvoy because, again, a team that wants to, it's an opportunity to trend a little younger with your leadership group. And I thought it would be McAvoy having that role and Marchand just continuing on the role that he's had for the longest time there in Boston behind Chara and behind Bergeron. I don't think Marchand would have even taken it as a slight if Charlie McAvoy, I think McAvoy is that respected within that room. I don't know that he would even take it as a slight that he wouldn't get the captaincy. So it surprises me a little bit that it's not McAvoy.
It doesn't surprise me. That's the way the Bruins have worked throughout this whole window of winning cups, right? It was Chara for the longest time, and then it was Bergeron who was up there. You know, they could have gone with younger players, and now it's Marchand for however long he's there. And I think Brad is one of the most amazing stories in the NHL. Like, who he is on the ice stats-wise is unbelievable when you look at him. You see him on the ice and there's no way you look at him and say, hey, that guy right there, he's a 40-goal scorer. He's made himself into that. And then for those who have been around him for his whole career, you would have never thought he was going to be a captain, when he was running around like a lunatic and doing all kinds of crazy stuff and the antics and everything else. And he's grown up in that organization. Patrice Bergeron helped him grow up. Zdeno Chara helped him grow up. And that's the way they handle their leadership, right? It's passed down one to the other. And now it's going to be Brad Marchand's job for however long he has it to pass it down to Charlie McAvoy, maybe a couple of years later than you want him to have it. He'll be ready. It's almost like marinating players at the AHL level. Like the Bruins marinate their captains at the NHL level. You think they're ready and they give them a couple more years to learn from somebody else. So I think Brad's the perfect choice for where this team is right now. And he has the ultimate respect of everybody in that room.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can flip it back and get, like I said, we got Jason Robertson interview here that we did at the player media tour. Jamie Benn's got two more years on his deal. He's the captain in he's obviously the captain in Dallas. He's been the captain in Dallas for a decade. Before him was Brendan Morrow. Before him, obviously, was Mike Modano and Darian Hatcher. I think Jason Robertson could be the next captain of the Dallas Stars, though not right away because Jamie Benn's there. But we did chat with the guy who I think is the future captain of the Dallas Stars at Player Media Tour last week. Here's that interview with Jason Robertson.
Jason, thanks for joining us. So just doing a little research, I came across a little social media stuff of you with the Texas Rangers throwing out the first pitch, and I saw a bat flip. I gotta say, you got a great shot. You might have to work on your bat flip, though.
Yeah, well, not on bat flip. I need to work on my hitting. my hitting was subpar. I think my batting percentage when they're laying up on me was like 300. So
well, that's a Hall of Famer in the
it is. When they're throwing 100 miles an hour, not 30 underhand and trying to let you hit it. So definitely got to improve on that.
Was that fun though? I mean, to be a part and just, I mean, really getting involved in other sports around Dallas too, right? I mean, you're at that point of your career and who you've become there that you're now being invited to do these types of things.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It was the first time I really got around. I mean, I wanted to get involved with the FC Dallas before. I never really worked out, but getting involved with the Texas Rangers at the time was really significant. I've never done anything like that. Going, doing BP, batting practice, throwing the first pitch. Hopefully, eventually, I could start doing some stuff with the Cowboys and the Mavs, too. So definitely being a household name in Dallas, you want to get involved in other sports. So that was a good stepping stone in the right direction.
What else did you play as a kid?
Yeah, well, I only played... I mean, I played T-ball a little bit, and then when I got old, like 6, 7, 8 years old, it's just started committing full-time hockey, and never picked up another sport ever. Matter of fact, I just picked up another sport this year called golf, and so I'm a big into. I was always into hockey, so that was it. I committed all my time to that.
Golf? I never heard of it.
Yeah, you ever heard of it?
So, what kind of golfer are you?
Not a scratch. No, I don't know. I'm not a good one. Not a good golfer. Like the game though. I stay, as long as you stay positive through 18, you're a good golfer. If you give up, then you're not. So positive.
I like your definition. That makes me as a 110 shooter, a good golfer. Yeah. Cause I'm positive through the whole debacle.
If you continue playing with a smile, I mean, you're playing golf. And if you don't, like, sometimes I get frustrated, and then you let the game beat you.
I like how what Sean just said though, because I'm positive through the whole debacle, because that's not negative at all.
No, well, it is. It's you're fighting yourself, you're fighting the course, you're fighting the clubs, the ball, you're fighting everything. And the only thing you control is yourself. You feel better. So
I mean, look, there's a lot of hockey stuff that we want to get into, but while we're on these types of subjects, what else did you do this summer? What was maybe one of the coolest things that you did this summer?
So I went to Maui this summer. We went to Kaanapali. Unfortunately, we went to Lahaina before it all burned down. But we were out there for a week and spent some time, enjoyed a nice vacation. I went with my mom and dad and my girlfriend. So it was pretty, it was nostalgic for us because our parents used to take us to Maui when we were kids. So it was very nostalgic for me and very happy that they were able to do that. So, and then when we came back, we just started training and grinding, and then eventually we had our little training camp or camp we put on in Fort Bragg in North Carolina. So it was pretty a lot of training this summer.
Well, you gotta be right, stay in shape and be ready for the season. I wanted to ask you one non-hockey question too. When you started talking about being around the city and doing different things. The first team you mentioned was FC Dallas. Are you a big soccer guy?
Yeah, so I'm a big, I mean, I play a lot of FIFA, so I play a lot of the game. I follow the team. I know that when Messi came to the MLS, that was pretty big there, and I know they played FC Dallas. I was in there, unfortunately, but I followed along, and I like watching it. I like watching Champions League, World Cup, Euros, everything, all the big events, and I made it out to one game last year with FC Dallas. Hopefully we'll make some more this coming year.
Fort Bragg. What are you doing in Fort Bragg?
So we ran a skills camp with the help of the United Heroes League and the NHLPA. We gathered around 70 kids whose parents served in the military, currently on the base. It's the only base in the country that has an ice rink on it. Biggest base in the country. I don't know how many people, a lot of people. And my brother and I came down with our skills coach to run two skates for the kids, you know, provided them jerseys and stuff. Had a blast on the ice, and then my brother and I and my dad came and my skills coach. We all kind of toured around the base and getting a feel for it, and went to the ranges and really just tried to get a different understanding of the life down there.
It must be unbelievably rewarding to be able to give back that way to people who give to our country every day.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one way we can do that. I know how privileged we are to be able to do what we do, and when we went down there and see what goes behind, you know, the closed doors, you don't see all that work they do, all that commitment they do. It's truly humbling, and all we did was try to, you know, give their kids and the people who participated a great experience. I think we were able to do that. We had a good time. The kids enjoyed it, and hopefully next year we'll be able to not only do that again, but perhaps expand on it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this the first time that you've done this?
Yeah, it's first time, and we kind of have the contacts and the information of all the people down there, and we look to try to build on that.
What was the reaction you got from the kids when they've got NHL players now coming to skate with them?
Yeah, I mean, they were obviously overwhelmed, I think. Their first reaction was, how does a hockey player get to where they are now? I know the closest team to them is Carolina Hurricanes, which is about an hour and a half, so it's quite a track to get there. But they see these big two hockey players, my brother and I, come down, and I would say they're intimidated by us, but they know like this is really unique, and to really enjoy these next couple of days. And there were, I think, once skate 60 kids on the ice, another one maybe 30, 40 kids. So definitely a handful. And we actually had help with the coaches there were also military members. I know the three-star general was one of the coaches, so we had a lot of help, and the coach staff and everyone helped get us all situated, so it was definitely a fun event.
Did it remind you a little bit of a hockey team? Like, you mentioned everything being behind the scenes. Yeah. You didn't know. Like, people see you play hockey, and they're like, wow, look, he's really good. They have no idea the work you put in, and it's kind of the same thing there for the soldiers. Like, you know they're ready to protect us, but you don't ever think about the sacrifices they make and the training that they do.
Yeah, I mean, I would never compare what we do to what they do. Obviously, what we do is insignificant to what they do. I mean, at the end of the day, but there are aspects where they're similar. Practicing reps. I know when we worked with the Special Forces. The Spec Ops is actually a big base down there in Fort Bragg. Spec Ops. So their big thing is doing the big, you know, big missions. And what they do is they prepare every certain possible way it could go. They prepare, which is similar to like hockey. You know, you practice all different situations, you work on certain things, you keep working and working, and you don't see that until you're on the end result on the ice. And in their case, in Spec Ops, they complete a mission and everything goes well, and hopefully, you know, in the hockey world, it goes that way.
It's amazing. I remember a couple of years ago, I was talking with you. You were embarking on a good season, but we talked about the bubble and, you know, putting on the weight in the bubble, having to shed that. You know, this is your journey, right, we're talking about. And here you are now, 100-point player in the league, 40 goals multiple times, and in doors are opening to experience so many things outside of the game that are still within the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it kind of, I mean, do you have pinch me moments that you're that what hockey is doing for you and your life experiences now?
Yeah. Yeah, well, definitely it's a privilege. I mean, all the work that I've put in and all the work that I've done leads to these opportunities, not only on the ice, but off the ice. To be able to go down to Fort Bragg is something that's truly humbling, like I said, to be able to do that. Working with the Children's Hospital down in Dallas is very special because you can touch these kids in certain ways. You know, make them feel part of the team and in the group and make them feel special. So there are a lot of different ways and a lot of new doors that are opening that I'm very excited for in the future. All I got to do is, like you said, keep doing those stuff away from the doors, keep working, keep being consistent on the ice, and keep being the player that I am or the person I am off the ice and those values and characteristics I've always had.
Let's talk a little bit about on the ice. Your season didn't end the way you wanted, but it doesn't for 31 teams. Only one team ends the way they want. A really good season, for sure, for you individually and for the team. Are you as excited as you've ever been about the Stars going into this season?
A lot of expectations. The previous year, there weren't too many expectations on even making the playoffs. Obviously, you saw how good our team would be and making that run in the playoffs. And now we have expectations of when we did the previous year, but now we really have that, know what it takes to get there. And we've had, we were five wins away from winning it all, right? We were the third team last standing. So we were very confident going in this year. I'm very confident. We learned the lessons that we did last year in the playoffs. Eliminating one team and then another team is not a lot of players could do that. Not a lot of players have made it to a conference final in their career. So it's very important that we take those lessons and try to implement it next time we're in the playoffs. But as of right now, we have the training camp, preseason, you know, first half of the season, all-star break, second half of the season. We got plenty of hockey and plenty of work to do. It's easier said than done, so just got to get started. Started on the right track.
I was going to say expectations can be a good thing, but they can also be, in September as we talk, they can be a dangerous thing too, couldn't it?
No, absolutely. I mean, people get complacent when they have expectations. People think that's going to be handed to them. People think, well, if other people think that we're going to do well, we are. And at the end of the day, what matters in the locker room, in the organization, is, you know, the management, the staff, and the players, and our fans, of course. Everything else is outside noise, and we just got to stick to the foundations that got us there last year and look to improve on that if and when we make the playoffs.
It was such a change last year, new coach, new system, everything. It obviously, it takes a while. You got there. It showed in that you went to the third round of the playoffs. But now as you come back, it's a little bit more old hat. You've had that experience. How much does that help as you move forward that there isn't a learning process now?
Well, we learn, you know, the adversity of your team. You really learn the adversity in the playoffs. You know what you're made of. And we definitely felt that in the first series, second series, and even the third series. You know, we were down three games and potentially getting swept and kind of ending on a sour note. And albeit we kind of did, losing the big blowout game in game six, we pulled one back, pulled a second one back, and kind of learned that your team has that resilience and that you have that capability. And now going into the regular season where the games, you know, they don't matter as much as the playoffs, they certainly do matter when you're in the moment and you're thinking about it, and it's great that we have that leadership and veteran group that we have.
Was it difficult to come back here to Vegas for this? I'm assuming this is your first time back since the end of the playoffs.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, you kind of move on very quickly, especially because we lost the series in our own building, so maybe it's harder to go back to our building. So, but it'll be all fine, and ready to move on to next year.
Jason, man, appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much and for telling us about the Fort Bragg stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah, perfect.
All right.
Awesome.
Good stuff there from Jason Robertson. Engaging, always a very engaging guy. Love what he's doing with Fort Bragg as well, Sean, with the, you know, on the base there. Listen, earlier, before we started recording, the Brad Marchand thing happened. Obviously, we touched on that. He's the new captain of the Boston Bruins. You know what also happened, sticking in that division? Steven Stamkos came out and talked to the media in Tampa. And this is going to create some news in the NHL. Steven Stamkos is now in the last year of his contract, and he basically expressed his disappointment and surprise that there has been zero talk, according to him, about an extension. Stamkos wants to be with the Tampa Bay Lightning for his entire career. He has been so far, number one pick in 2008 draft. He's a legend in Tampa. You know, he's obviously, you know, one of the greatest players of his generation. And he wants to sign an extension. He wants a new contract. He wants to know that he can retire a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And he is disappointed. And I'm frankly surprised that there has been zero talk of an extension. According to Stamkos, for Stamkos, he said he talked about it to them at the end of last season, expressed his desire to get it done, asked if he's willing to negotiate during the season by the media. He said, I'm ready whenever they are. And I'm a little bit surprised, you know, that Steven Stamkos has not gotten that extension, or at least he said there's been no talk. Although I do wonder, Sean, if Stamkos was hoping to get that question today on the first day of training camp, Wednesday, so he could answer it that way. So he can, in his way, move the ball forward here to get the talks going. Go public on it kind of puts the pressure on the Lightning a little bit.
You would think that Steven Stamkos, after all this time, would understand how the Tampa Bay Lightning do their business.
Yeah.
There's no room at the inn right now. There's $6 million over the cap at the moment.
There's no room at the inn right now, but you know there's room for Steven Stamkos. Okay.
I'm not saying there's not, but
there's there's going to be room for Stamkos, whether they sign him at the end of last season, this summer, or at the beginning of this season. It's not for this season. It's for next season. They can worry about that next summer. There's room for Steven Stamkos.
Dan, I don't think anybody said there wasn't room for Steven Stamkos. The inn is full right now. They need a vacancy, right? There's $6 million over the cap. You're going to commit to a number for Steven Stamkos right now that's going to handicap you when you get to the trade deadline, where every year your GM has made some sort of move to make your team better? They need to know what their number is going to be for next year. It's a huge number already before you even get to Steven Stamkos. Can they add? Do they have to subtract? What's going to happen? They need to know after the trade deadline where they are in salary cap before they can say, hey, Steven Stamkos, Tampa Bay legend, here's your number.
Do you feel as if that conversation was had, and we don't know if that conversation was had, but if that was had, would Stamkos have expressed what he expressed today, Wednesday?
I have no idea. But like I said, I just think you need to understand what the business is and the way that Tampa's done their business. They've taken care of everybody. They've taken care of their core.
Or traded everybody.
Yeah, but they've taken care of their core. They don't trade their core.
Well, they didn't sign Alex Killorn, and he's been a big part of their core. Different than Stamkos. I'm not going to compare Killorn to Stamkos and Hedman and Kucherov and Point, but Killorn was a part of it, no question. But they didn't have room for him, and it was understandable.
He was the fifth Beatle.
Yeah, yes.
I love Alex Killorn.
Yes.
But there's only so many pieces of the pie. Or as Jacques Lemaire, the Devils coach, used to say, there's only so many pieces of the cookie that the players can have. But he was talking about power play time.
Right.
But it's the same for contracts. In a cap world, there's only so much cash to be handed out.
Right.
And a good GM isn't going to give away his pieces of the pie until he understands who's sitting at the table.
And listen, all the rest of their important pieces, as we can identify them, are signed for next season, except for Stamkos. But the one thing is, and I know we talk about the salary cap going up, and this is going to play to your point, right? The salary cap could go up $4.5 million or whatever. Well, Brandon Hagel's cap number goes up $5 million because he signed a long-term extension that kicks in at the start of next season. So whatever growth you get from that cap going up, that's Hagel's right now. If you want to just break it down to simple math like that, that belongs to Brandon Hagel right now. So listen, there's room for Steven Stamkos. I would be stunned if it didn't. I think everybody would be stunned if it did not get done, because he's going to play. I feel he should, and I definitely think he will. He'll play every game of his National Hockey League career with the Tampa Bay Lightning. However, cue the stories of Stamkos to Toronto. That's going to happen. It's just going to happen. That's just the way things go.
Dude, they're being written right now in Toronto by all our good friends.
They were already written. They're just being republished now.
Yeah, but look, there's no suggestion here that there's a nefarious plot that Steven Stamkos is no longer going to be a part of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He is the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they will find a way to do it. but nobody commits early, right? Like you don't go all in until you have to go all in. And they're not in a position to have to go all in. There's no place that Steven Stamkos can go. There's nothing that he can do about it. They hold all the cards, and they should have all the information before they say, Steven, here's the number that we would like to start at. This works for us.
The Maple Leafs committed early on Matthews. And I think the cap...
Different salary cap worlds.
True. The Capitals committed early on Alex Ovechkin. And he's got 3 years left on his deal. And I'm changing topics now from Stamkos, by the way, to Alex Ovechkin, because I got a question about him in my mailbag this week. It's up on NHL.com right now. How many goals will Alex Ovechkin score this season? Sean, give me a number. How many goals will Alex Ovechkin score this season?
38.
Wrong. I saw you saying 30 and I'm like, wrong. No, you know what? You could be right on with that and that would be a good season, right? I said over 40 if he plays 75 or more games. I think he's, because he's still got arguably the best shot in the league. He could still score. He scored 50 a few years ago. He scored in the 40s last season. I think he still can do that, and there's still a push and a motivation to get to Gretzky. He's 72 away from Gretzky right now. He's going to get there. He's going to get there next season, and that brings up the other question I got on the Capitals. So you say 38, I'll say 42. Okay. That, whatever. We're four goals apart. Either way, it's a good season for Alex Ovechkin. But the other question, probably the bigger question that I got in the mailbag on the Capitals and Ovechkin was, is this going to consume them? The chase for Gretzky, is that going to consume the Capitals rather than them being consumed by a chase for another Stanley Cup championship in the Ovechkin era? I don't think so. I think the two can run simultaneously. I don't think the Capitals are a Stanley Cup contender right now. A lot has to break right for them to be a Stanley Cup contender this season. But remember last season, Ovechkin, as he pushed for 800 and 801, Gordie Howe passing him, becoming number two on the all-time list, the Capitals seemed motivated by it, and they played their best hockey around that time. As that push was going on, they won five in a row leading up to him scoring his 800th goal. They won five in a row leading up to him scoring 802, right? They went like 11-1, and I think they were like 11-1 between, you know, in a handful of days in those time in December when he was really in that last push for 800 and then pushing to pass Gordie Howe. It motivated them. It was motivating him. The one issue is they're not going to have that this year. Unless he's pushing up on 70 goals this season, he's not getting any milestone numbers this season. It's not happening. So they're going to have to find it in another way. And I think they can. But Sean, I don't think the Capitals in a pursuit for a Stanley Cup are good enough right now. I think it's way more odds that Alex Ovechkin will get 72 goals or 73 before the Capitals even contend for another Stanley Cup.
No, I don't think they're good enough. And part of it is the competition that they have. But you say that they can run together. They have to run together.
Well, they have to run together. Yeah.
He's their best player. If he's not driving that boat, captaining that boat, conning that boat, whatever you want to call it, they're going to founder. There's all my nautical terms put together in one sentence. Wow. They go as he goes. So they have to live together. Like, they should be pushing Alex to score because he's one of like three people on the team that can score.
Yeah. Right. And when he scored 50, they were a playoff team. When he scored 40, they weren't. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but
yeah, Tom Wilson was hurt.
Yeah, I don't know that he gets the 50 again. I'm not gonna say he won't. I'm not that nuts, but it's a lot, right? He's 38 years old. He just turned 38 years old this week, so they have to run simultaneous. They do. They're just not gonna have that motivation this season of watching Ovechkin chase a milestone. That milestone is next season. It's not this season.
Yeah, but what they do have is the precious little time they have left with Alex Ovechkin. Like, he's going to play out his contract. Who knows? There might be a little bit more, but I'm not insulting anybody by saying the man's on the back nine of his career. And I think the players who play with him know that, and they're going to savor every moment, and they're going to try and make the most out of every moment. When you think about it, the players who played with Alex Ovechkin are going to be able to have the same conversation that the players who played with Wayne Gretzky had.
Yeah.
Which is, I played with this man. I got to do these things with him, and nobody throws that away. Nobody takes that for granted. I think when you're given those opportunities, you try and make the most out of them. It's a very special thing for anybody in their career to be able to be associated with greatness like that. You know, it's the same thing for people who played with Michael Jordan. You know, it engenders your best because you're around the best. So I think that's going to be more the motivating factor, is that they don't want this to be played out in mediocrity.
Yeah, I'm around the best every week when I do this podcast. Bob Bender, our producer, is the absolute best. Oh,
I knew it wasn't me.
Yeah, it's, well, no, come on, Sean. It is you, but it's also Bob. Anyway.
By the way, speaking of the best, just a quick shout out before you do your goodbyes. So you mentioned we were in Vegas. That's where we got the great interviews with Keller and Robertson. The best is Brian Slagle, our good friend, who hooked us up all week with Feast Fit for a King. The man knows his restaurants, treated us well, Stan Social and Caesar's Palace, and the Tequila Katina and Henderson. I haven't eaten since I got home. It's been 7 days.
It was great. He is a legend, and this was a lot of fun. I'm glad we're back doing this weekly. Training camps are open. We'll have more interviews from Player Media Tour next week. Enjoy the hockey.